Yeah, I think you're talking about the adept rhythms that's mentioned in the Law of One. And so there's biorhythm, intelligence, I think, and then the adept scale, or the adept.
And there was four.
Was there four?
On there, adept, emotional, intelligence.
That's right.
And
health or bio.
Well, anyway, there's four. It'll come to me in a minute.
Yeah. So I'm not 100% sure that I'm correct in how I'm interpreting the adept rhythms, but what I can glean from the Law of One regarding it, and then also what I can glean from my own work in it, is that there, Ross says that the adept scale cycles every 18 days. And I'm sure that there's a reason why it's every 18 days. I mean, it's divisible by three in some way. And so three is the great number, you know, the law of three, affirming force, denying force, reconciling force. And so there's probably some way in which the adept scale mirrors that. But it starts when you are the hour that you're born, not even the day, but like the hour you're born. And if you can picture that, just as you and I have a head and arms and all, you know, we are a body made up of trillions and trillions of cells, well, then the sun logos, the sub logos, the most noticeable part of the body of the sun logos would be the sun, but its body also includes all of the other planets, and not just the planets, but like the entire heliosphere, you know, this massive, massive, incredibly gargantuan inclusion of planets and planetoids and the Oort cloud and all of this stuff is the heliosphere, and that is its body. But inside its body, just like you and I, its body has chakras, energy centers. And those energy centers could be considered the planets in some ways. Now, I think it operates a little bit differently at that level in terms of the physical chakras. But my guess is, this is all just a guess, I don't really obviously know, but my guess is that the Saturn would be like its heart, like the heart of the logos. Ross says that Saturn is the site of the, you could call it the local headquarters of the solar system. It's called the confederation of the planets in the service of the one infinite creator. The Council of Saturn sits there, it takes place in the energy realms. It takes place in different dimensions. Really, it's like the cusp of the next octave and this octave. So it's eighth density, if you will. It's maybe, yeah, eighth density, and it's taking place energetically. From our perspective, it would be in the rings area, but that doesn't mean that the rings are there, say, in that particular place. But energetically, that's what it would look like. So you have all of these different planets that are the major planets, and they are chakras. They are energy vortices. And so you and I are part of this body of the sun. Everything about us, with the exception of maybe the soul, if the soul came from a different density, you know, to this one, but say a lot of the souls that are here, that are for the wanderers, for example, they're coming from the Ra group. So the Ra group is still a group that From this logos, exactly, from Venus. Another wanderers from different logoi outside of this particular heliosphere. But regardless, everything else is yours. Everything else about our bodies, and moreover, how we conceive of reality, the archetypal mind of the logos, these archetypes, these 22 archetypes, this is all coming from the uniqueness of our particular logos in its own development. Yeah. So when you and I were born from a body, mother, from a body that is also from this particular realm, we are born and we are imprinted. We are a part of the energy nexus that includes everything. So you can almost think of like a massive spider web, like huge, massive spider web. And then just for fun, just picture in your mind, like from some area of this spider web, you know, maybe you could think of it like a nexus of web, almost like a plant coming out of the surface of the web into its own individuatedness, but it's still a part of everything else. It's not different than everything else. Yeah. Maybe you can think of a crop that
maybe
grows.
Maybe like a vine.
Oh, yeah. There we go. Maybe a vine growing. Yeah. It's a part of the entire earth, but yet it's still itself. And so just like that, you and I have these energetic imprints that would be very specific to the exact moment of when you're born. And so you're coming out of this, and that is when the adept cycle begins. And so every 18 days, every 9 days, you're going to have a movement. Let's say if you start from zero, you'll have a movement up, 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 up to the crescendo of nine, and then it's down, 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 down until you get into the valley, and then you kind of go up again, and it just flows like that. Now, my own understanding, which is not robust, but you can try it out with your own, I guess, experience if you wanted to track it, because you can track those things. That is, when we are approaching the zenith, of zenith, I guess, would be up here, and the nadir would be the bottom part. The zenith, the climax of the adept scale, as we're approaching it, the veil, experientially, the veil feels thinner. We may have more of a capacity to see further in our mind's eye. Intuitions might come more readily. Moreover, other entities may find it easier not to contact us per se, but for us to perceive the contact.
Okay.
Because the veil is a little bit thinner. Maybe think of when we're on the phone to somebody and then we're passing through a dead zone. Mm-hmm. It's not that you're not talking to that person. It's just that that person maybe can't hear you. But then when you get back into a place where you can pick up the message again, then you can continue your conversation. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So when we're at that zenith area, there's no dead zone. The dead zone is real thin. We're able to communicate much more readily. But that doesn't mean that there's not communication going on all the time. It doesn't mean, say, the infinite creator's presence can't be availed any other time. Mm-hmm. What it just simply means is that we might be able to experience life a little bit less veiled. Mm-hmm. So whatever natural ability you might have adept-wise and doing white magical work and that kind of thing. Now, I don't mean just rituals. I mean just having a good conversation, having the capacity to create a depth inside that conversation that is transformative for both people, but that might be easier to do where it's like, these weren't my words, but something was coming through me, mm-hmm. kind of thing, that might be more readily available when the veil is thinner. Now, when we're in these moments of not being able to experience the veil feels thicker in some ways. That doesn't mean that everything that we felt so keenly just a few days before isn't fully present right here. Mm-hmm. What is important to note, this is again my own distortion, but what is important to note is that there's a place for faith in the times when we don't feel the veil very well, feel the veil very thickly, let's say.
Right.
Because faith is to trust anyways, even if we don't feel something, to trust that our love counts, our gesture of love counts, our desire for something, our will, that we're putting the orientation that our will creates, the energetic orientation that our will creates, like this vortex in front of us of a desiring, that isn't always and everywhere efficacious, even if we can't feel it as much. And so in some ways, at least on third density, might have a different aspect in fourth density when the veil is removed, but at least in third density, there's a case to be made that the will and faith are even more powerful when there's a feeling of the veil being thicker, because you don't have that phenomenological gnosis of, yes, the veil is thin, I can see so far. It's like you're underwater, muddy water, trying to see. But nonetheless, intuiting and having the faith that you are seeing and you can affect change.
So would you? So we're talking about adept. There's three other cycles. I looked it up. One is intelligence, emotional, and physical.
Mm-hmm.
Would you? Do you have much insight on?
Well, they're all different. Have different sine waves.
Right. Yeah. They're on different paths.
Different paths. Yeah. And I'm not sure exactly what the days are and all of that stuff, like how long those are. But I would think that, try it out to your own experience. Like if you feel kind of on top of your game physically, going to the gym, things are easier. And all things being equal in terms of meals and sleep that you've been doing, if you're not feeling as with it, integrated physically one day, well, just for fun, check to see if it's kind of a downward movement. Maybe try this on, and I could be wrong. I think the emotional wave is going to be connected to our capacity to receive and process catalysts that are coming to us. Because how do we know how to use catalyst is going to be informed by our emotions. When something happens to us, we're going to get an emotional response. And that emotional response is information that we then use to make a decision about how we're going to respond to that. And then our intelligence might be connected to the degree to which we respond.
That might make sense, because my emotional line was very low right when Cannon broke his toe.
See? And so we have instead of responding, you had a reaction.
Yeah.
Instead of responding, you had a reaction, yeah. And then the intelligence piece would be, to what degree can I use all of the inner resources to make an intelligent response that's fully informed, or as much as possible informed, by the balance of love and wisdom, the heart and head. But if I'm mostly a lower chakra triad person that hasn't been able to activate the heart consistently, then I'm probably going to be emotionally triggered all the time. Everything is going to piss me off. Everything, and I'm going to develop coping mechanisms to deal with it that might function, in other words, keep me to some kind of stability, mm-hmm. but it also might entrap me all the more in the lower chakra triad. So for example, if I've experienced insecurity, maybe I had a difficult childhood, all of these other things, and then I grow up and all I want to do is talk about myself, talk about how much money I make and all the things that I can buy and then how much money I give away and all of this stuff, like, and then not even have the capacity to, say, enter into your life and ask you how you're doing and let's explore your life, you know, just really make it about me. And well, maybe I'm feeling emotional, that there's a constant sense inside me, these eddies, these energetic eddies that we've talked about, mm-hmm. where they get, you know, in the stream stuck, the whirlpools that form in rivers and whatnot. Maybe there's many emotional eddies that are operating all the time, and I'm not even aware of them because I have little capacity to go inside. So whenever I am receiving catalysts seemingly externally from outside of me, it's not me that's showing up as much as it is, or the higher parts of me, but rather it's being processed through these eddies, getting sucked into the whirlpool, and then and those eddies become the site from which I understand my emotions, and then using intelligence how to deal with those emotions, that information those emotions are giving me.
Yeah. Yeah, just like the person I talked to the other day, it was real interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Everything came back to him and what he did.
Yeah. And so you have no idea, like, to what are the eddies that he's operating on and unaware of, to be able to feel like that is appropriate, you know.
Well, and there's a lot of people too that, you know, they're treated a certain way. They operate from fear, right? Like you said, they create a coping mechanism where, you know, to protect themselves, they have to fight or be angry or attack first
all the time
to be able to feel safe.
They're always on the offensive because they feel defended inside. In other words, there's a vulnerability that's never been healed or looked at, so they have to be always on the defense on the inside, which puts them on the offense on the outside.
Yeah.
The best defense is a good offense kind of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so they're using their intelligence to be effective in their offense, being an offensive, you know, and angry and trying to
or at least assert their
aggress, to be assert their aggression, sure. Or passive aggression, and it's in the service of winning, you know, domination or control, even if it's not belonging fully to the negative, you know, polarity. But nonetheless, I think that's what I would say, is the emotional sine wave would be just the rhythms. Ra says that everything is rhythm, you know, these rhythms of energy that would inform us to our ability and capacity, how facile, that's an English word, facile, how easy it is to use our emotions as information from the catalyst that we receive, using our emotions to process the catalyst and then appropriately respond, and that would be using our intellect. Emotions is our natural response from the outside, and then we use our intelligence to react if it's lower chakras, or respond if it's a little bit higher.
It's interesting, this, you know, this one didn't say it was down to the hour, but my, you know, they had said that there's one called Human Design, I think. That he said you actually need to ask for the hour.
Yeah.
So I guess my point is more like, okay, I want to use it as a tool, but if it's something that's not useful, then like I don't want to focus on my time.
Don't focus. Yeah. I mean, this is the other thing that the Law of One says, and I want to offer this here because it's important, is to the balanced and harmonized person. Mm-hmm. These rhythms are less and less important. Mm-hmm. I think in part because one has learned so much about the impact of will and faith. Mm-hmm. And is not attached to, oh, I'm not feeling it today. You know, I mean, you'll see so many in New Age circles like, man, we're getting a lot of solar flashes, solar wave today, and Jupiter's in the house of Saturn or something like that. And it's like, oh my gosh, you know, no wonder why life is so hard. Sure, it can be interesting, but you know what? We can do hard things, and a part of the growth is how do we handle that more astrological seeming adversity to polarize more on the positive path.
Well, I think, like you said too, like that's where the most work can be done.
I agree. Yeah. So it could be received as helpful and interesting information, but if I start to base everything upon it, and then put so much stock into it, it becomes another externalization, you know, external locus of control, something outside to which I'm a victim again. Mm-hmm. And it becomes disempowering.
Yeah.
So that's why it's to hold it loosely, let it be interesting. It's like the whole Law of One metaphysics. Doesn't mean it's not true in some ways. But I don't need to have it define me, even if I enjoy it and use it as a way to understand reality a lot.
Yeah, that's good.
So I'm going to clean this one up. I'm going to take your voice out of...